Shrink Wrap Radio number 419, Internal Family Systems Therapy with Dr. J. Early.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Jay Early, PhD, psychotherapist, group leader, author, teacher, and theorist specializing in internal family systems therapy. For more information about Dr. Early, please see our show notes for this episode at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Jay Early, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you on the show, and I noted with some interest that that you've got two PhDs, and that's kind of fascinating in itself. Maybe you can give us a bit of what your educational and spiritual journey has been like.
Sure. Well, my original PhD was in computer science, and I taught at UC Berkeley for 6 years. And then decided that even though I enjoyed doing it, that didn't feel like my life purpose. So I was in therapy myself and got really interested in psychology. So I went back and got a PhD in psychology and became a psychologist, a psychotherapist, which I've now been doing for about 40 years.
Oh, wow. that's a lot of time. So when you went to Saybrook, that wasn't 40 years ago, was it, or was it?
I think it was.
My goodness. You must have been one of the early graduates then.
Yeah, I wasn't the real early, but yeah, I was. I think that's right, I was already practicing a little bit, you know, when I started at Saybrook. But yeah, it was basically, so by the time I finished, it was probably less than 40 years ago.
Yeah, and you got your computer science PhD from Carnegie Mellon, which is like one of the most prestigious places to do that kind of study.
Right. And I was one of the first PhDs in computer science in the country, actually. Because that was one of the first programs.
Wow. That's really impressive. And something that we'll get into towards the end of the interview is I have the impression that you've created a psychotherapy app. Do I have that right?
Pretty close. It's an application. It's actually a web application. It doesn't work. The reason I wouldn't call it an app is that it doesn't work all that well on smartphones yet. It hasn't been optimized for that small screen. But on a tablet or on a computer, yeah, it's an application where you can go in and I think it's really the first of its kind, where you can really go in and do deep psychological work on issues and really work on changing your behavior.
Wow. Well, we are definitely going to want to hear more about that. Now, among other things, and clear already we can see that there are a lot of other things that you've been involved with, but you've been involved with an approach known as internal family systems therapy. And we'll go into greater detail as we go along, but for now, maybe you could give us just kind of the top-level definition for what family systems therapy is.
Yeah, so first of all, it's actually a form of individual therapy. The name is a little confusing. It's internal family systems therapy, which means that it works with our sub-personalities. You know, like when we say, a part of me really feels like eating a lot and a part of me is trying to lose weight, you know, that, so those are sub-personalities, and probably many of you have heard of the inner child work from the 80s. That was an early version of working with sub-personalities.
Yes.
But internal family systems therapy, IFS, was developed by Richard Schwartz, and he really has developed a very sophisticated inclusive method of working with subpersonalities that I have found to be extremely powerful and also very user-friendly. So it makes it easy for people to not only make a lot of progress when they're in IFS therapy, but also to do it on their own, many people.
Okay, now you mentioned Richard Schwartz as the originator, and I'm wondering what else you can tell us about the origins or the history of IFS therapy, because quite frankly, I was surprised that I hadn't heard of it. How long has it been around?
Well, it's been around for 25 or 30 years, but it's only in the last decade that it started to become more widespread and popular. I mean, at this point, there are training programs in IFS in many cities in the country and actually in Europe too, but it's only the last 10 years that it started to really grow and become known. But anyway, in terms of the origins of it, Dick Schwartz was originally a family therapist and was pretty deeply involved in that and actually wrote one of the big textbooks in the field. And then he ran into situations where doing all the right family therapy things didn't really solve people's problems, especially he was working with a lot of people with bulimia. And he started inquiring more into what was going on internally with these people, not just in their family systems, and discovered, as many people have, that we have parts inside us and that you can actually talk to the parts and they will talk back to you and form relationships with them and so on. And in addition, Dick, and this he was not the first one to discover this. I mean, this is in Jung's work, and it's in voice dialogue and psychosynthesis. But
yeah, Dick, exactly. I was also Eric Byrne, right?
Right, right.
And transactional analysis and gestalt therapy. And so I was kind of impressed. NLP talks a lot about your parts and talking to your parts and so on. So
right.
I was interested that that concept has been used by so many different approaches.
And the thing that Dick discovered and why he called it internal family systems therapy is that we don't just have parts, but the parts are related to each other in a system. Like some parts protect against other parts, some parts are fighting other parts, some parts are allied with other parts, and so on. So there's really a system inside us of these different parts. And Dick even realized that some of the principles that he knew from family therapy could be adapted to working with our internal parts. I mean, there's a lot more to IFS than that, but that's the origins of why he called it that.
Okay. What can you tell us about the basic assumptions of the approach?
Okay. Well, the most basic assumption is multiplicity, is that we are not a single personality the way we generally think we are, that we actually are made up of many different parts with, some have, maybe I should say more about what examples of parts. So there's, one of the famous parts is the inner critic, the type of part that judges us harshly.
Yeah, I think we all recognize that one.
Right. And then there's the famous inner child, but it's actually, there isn't just one inner child. There are many different child parts that we all have. Hmm. And many of them are pushed out of consciousness. And so Dick actually called them exiles, mm-hmm, because they're actually exiled mostly from consciousness. Every once in a while they break through. But the exiles carry pain from childhood, pain or even trauma in some cases. And those certain parts carry that pain, and because of that, they are exiled from the system, because, you know, our systems are set up to, you know, to get us away from pain if possible. And that's one of the things that makes, you know, in other forms of therapy, we have defenses. In IFS, the defenses are called protectors, or they're also called managers and firefighters, which are two kinds of protectors. But those are basically...
Now, what's the difference between managers and firefighters?
First of all, I kind of jumped the gun there. Let me explain the difference between, first of all, a protector and an exile.
Okay.
So an exile is a child part that carries pain from the past. And a protector is a part that tries to arrange your psyche through defenses or your life through the way you behave in such a way that you won't ever have to feel the pain of your exiles. Or, in some cases, the protectors try to protect exiles from being hurt or from dangers that they imagine are in your life now, although often they really go back to childhood. So that's the, and that's the main distinction in IFS, is between protectors and exiles. So you generally work with the protectors first, which are a kind of equivalent to what I've thought of as defenses in other forms of therapy, although it's a little bit more than that.
Right, and they always say don't attack the defenses. So you're kind of, it sounds like you're making friends with the protectors initially.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that, so the other big concept in IFS is the self. And Dick, as he was working with his clients, every once in a while, he would say, you know, well, what part is there now? And the client would say, and it always moves me when I talk about this, the part would say, this isn't the part, this is me. This is my real self. And Dick realized that when they were in that place, they were in a place of compassion and caring and connectedness, and not only with other people, but with their parts. And so Dick began to realize that the way to do the work was not just for the therapist to work with the parts, but in actuality to help the clients to come into self, and the clients actually work with their own parts as self. And that's one of the things that makes IFS so easy to adapt for self therapy as well as for, you know, working with a therapist.
Yeah. Now, do you know if Dick was influenced at all by Jung? Because it sounds, you know, the capital S self plays such a big role in Jungian psychology.
Yeah, Dick means something different, I think, than Jung did by self. I don't think he was influenced all that much by Jung. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't, even though clearly his work is related to Gestalt and Jung and psychosynthesis and so on. It seems like it mostly, I mean, he kind of like read up on that stuff, but as he was developing, it was really just coming out of his work with his own clients and his interactions with their parts.
How did you first become aware of this work?
In 2002, a friend of mine who had, you know, I guess trained with Dick or at least done some workshops with him, told me about it and said, this is really interesting stuff. You know, go try it, go check it out. So I did, and it looked fascinating, and I got his books and read them and just was just so taken by the power of it. By the way, one thing I should say in speaking of that is the thing that makes it so powerful is that the parts are like little people inside of us. And you can actually talk to them and get to know them and find out how they feel and develop trusting relationships with them. And it gives you much greater power to actually work with the different psychological constructs that we all have in our psyches, rather than just treating them as objects to be sort of dealt with or, you know, whatever. You can actually talk to them and work with them. So it gives a lot greater power in terms of working with the psyche.
Yeah. And of course, another system that comes to mind is psychodrama. You know, and both Gestalt and psychodrama have that concept of actually being able to talk to and dialogue with different internal parts.
Right. Yeah. So it's been around a long time and been, exactly as you're saying, used by a lot of different systems. In fact, there's a lot of current systems too that I keep hearing about. Somebody has a little therapy here that all works with parts, and so it's getting around this concept of multiplicity.
Yeah, and it also puts me in mind of emerging knowledge about the brain, where I think we're beginning to understand that there are different sort of semi-autonomous systems in the brain, and so. You know, who knows? Maybe someday this will map to that, or that will map to this.
Right, yeah.
One of the things that I read as I was preparing for the interview, and I kind of went online and tried to see what I could find out about this, is that all the parts are viewed as positive, but that you talk about some parts being to extreme. Can you say something about that?
Yeah. I wouldn't quite say that the parts are viewed as positive exactly. What's okay. recognized is that they all have a positive intent.
Ah. I mean,
some of our parts actually are quite negative for us. In fact, usually the parts that we end up working on in therapy are causing us a lot of pain or difficulty in relating to people or whatever. So that the parts' impact on us can be quite negative, even though they are attempting to do something positive for us. So let me give you an example of that.
Good.
So let's say you have a part that's that makes you procrastinate. This is actually an interesting one because most people, when they procrastinate, they're usually just aware of, oh, I need to do this. So there's a part of them that, knows they need to do something and wants to do it. What they aren't aware of usually is that there's another part of them that doesn't want to do it. And that part is often unconscious and prevents them from getting things done or doing things well or moving ahead with their life and so on. So it's often a big issue for people. And the procrastinating part is a protector almost always. And if, as people, when people go inside and get to know their procrastinating part and say, well, what are you afraid would happen if you let me do this task? Often the part will say, well, I'm afraid that you'll fail. Or people will laugh at you, or people will judge you, and you'll feel terrible. Or, you know, you'll put it out in the world and you'll be attacked, you know, somehow.
Yeah.
So the part is trying to protect you. Of course, it's doing it in an ineffective, unconscious way, you know, as these problematic parts do. But its heart is in the right place, and that's one of the powerful things about IFS is that you don't have to fight with your parts. You don't have to try to get rid of them. You don't have to, you know, get the, you know, judge them or get angry at them, which of course is what we usually do. But instead, you can actually get to know them and find out what their positive intent is and make a connection with them and develop a trusting relationship with them. And then there's that sort of sets the groundwork for the further steps of actually healing and transforming the parts.
Okay, now you did talk about exiles and managers, and you mentioned in passing firefighters. Can you tell us a bit about the firefighter part?
Yes, sure. Actually, yeah, that's right. I lost track there. So there are exiles and protectors. Protectors are to come in two flavors, managers and firefighters. And managers basically try to proactively, well, they'll do two things, and I should probably give some more examples. So managers, one of the things they do is try to arrange things in your psyche so that you don't feel the pain of the exiles. So many people have an intellectual manager that puts them into their head and away from their feelings so that they won't feel the pain of the exiles. And then there are managers that try to arrange the way you relate to people. So somebody might have a people-pleasing manager that tries to get them to please people because they're afraid if they don't, they'll get attacked or abandoned or something. And other people may be the opposite. Maybe they have a controlling manager that tries to be in control in most situations in your life because that manager is afraid of what will happen if you're not in control. So basically, or there's managers that just shut you down so that you can't feel anything because that keeps you away from the pain of your exiles. So managers basically proactively try to arrange your psyche and your life and your relationships in such a way that the pain of your exiles doesn't come up. But of course, sometimes that doesn't work. Something will happen and will trigger the pain of an exile. Let's say somebody judges you. And that triggers the pain of an exile that was judged a lot as a child. And that pain starts to come up. Well, sometimes a firefighter will jump in and try to distract you or get rid of that pain in a sort of impulsive, in-the-moment way, where managers try to arrange things proactively so the pain won't come up. Firefighters get triggered when the pain is starting to come up. So if somebody judges me, I might have an angry firefighter that would react with anger as a way of keeping me from feeling the pain of being judged. That's an example. Or another example of firefighters is drink. You know, I'm upset about something, I'll go get drunk. Or if I'm an eater, I'll go eat a whole cake or something like that or whatever. So there's firefighters are parts that kind of get triggered in the moment to distract you or dull you or take you away from pain that's coming up. And you may not even realize that the pain is coming up. The firefighter can come in that quickly. It is coming up, but the firefighter, so all you know is you're angry, or all you know is you got to have a drink, you know, or whatever it might be. You may not even realize that that was a defense against pain that was starting to arise.
So how would you describe the goals of IFS therapy?
Okay, I think you can describe it in two ways. One is that the goal is to... So remember I talked about the self. The self is who you truly are when you're not taken over by problematic parts. You know, the managers, the firefighters, and the exiles. Then you're just naturally in self and you can relate to people from an open, curious, compassionate place, and you're fairly grounded, and you basically have your natural good qualities available to you. You can even think of the self as your spiritual center.
Mm-hmm.
So one goal is to have the self be, basically to live your life as much as possible from self, so that that's where you're coming from and your parts are not taking over. But the way you do that is you, one at a time, you work with your problematic parts. And you basically, through IFS, and I'll need to tell you more about how this happens, but through IFS, you heal and transform these problematic parts so that they can have their natural, healthy functions. So, for example, your procrastinating part, its natural function might just be to relax and have fun. But instead, it gets to the point of, I want to do that instead of getting the things I need to have done. So once you've healed your parts, they can assume their natural, healthy roles. Same with your exiles. The parts that are in pain, that pain can be healed and, well, the technical term in IFS is unburdened, to release the pain, so that the exile is no longer carrying the pain from childhood and can assume its natural, healthy function, which might be, you know, curiosity or playfulness or joy or whatever.
Okay.
I have a feeling I didn't finish answering that question, but I can't remember what it was.
We were talking about the goals of IFS.
Oh, right,
and you did imply that there would be more.
Right. So the second goal is to transform your, heal your, unburden your parts so that they're functioning from their natural, healthy places, and to, in the process of that, develop a trusting relationship between the parts and the self, so that the parts will trust the self and allow the self to lead. And so then the ideal situation is you have that you're mostly in self, but the self sort of just naturally calls on your healthy parts. So if you need a part in it because you want to be intimate with your wife, you have a part that comes in for that. Or if you have a creative part that's needed at a certain point, that comes in. Or if you need an assertive part, that can come in. So basically, you want to have a bunch of healthy parts that are led by the self.
Well, that explains something for me, because I went to the IFS website, and I believe it's called the Self Leadership Institute. And
Right. That
kind of an interesting notion, the self leadership. You know, generally we think of leading others, but the way that you've just put that, as you're talking about that goal, this self, this core self or higher self as the leader of the parts, that kind of gives it more of a context that makes sense of it.
Good. Yeah, that's what it's about.
An interesting thing about this is I gather it can be used either with families, which, you know, has got the word family therapy in it, or with individuals. So I think you've mostly focused on the individual approach so far. How would it be used in a family context?
You know, I really can't comment a lot on that because I don't work with families.
Oh, okay.
It's actually used a lot in doing couples therapy. I don't really work with couples anymore either, but I used to. And so I know something about how it's used with couples.
Okay, that'll do.
Well, basically, one way to think of it is that you can, if couples generally are in therapy because they're having fights that are really, you know, causing a lot of difficulty.
Yeah.
And what you can do is you can sit down with a couple and ask questions, and you can kind of analyze what happens in a fight between any two people, you know, or even an argument or anything. Because generally what happens is somebody will say something or do something that's coming from one of their protectors. They'll be judgmental or angry or withdrawing or, you know, whatever it might be, and that will generally trigger, that will trigger an exile in their partner. They will, if they're judgmental, they'll trigger an exile of their partner that was judged as a child. Or if they're angry, they'll trigger an exile that's afraid of anger. Or if they're withdrawing, they'll trigger an exile that was abandoned or deprived as a child, and so on. So one partner will say something from a protector, it will trigger the other partner's, one of the other partner's exiles, but then the other partner will have a protector come up to protect that exile, and they'll respond from that protector. They'll get angry, or they'll get judgmental, or they'll pull away, or they'll become a pleaser, or they'll get passive aggressive, or whatever it might be. And that then tends to trigger an exile in the first person, and then they'll have a protector come up, and so then it'll end up with protector wars, is basically, without usually either person being aware that their exiles are being triggered, and that's why usually most people are not even aware of how they're responding. Well, they're aware of my partner is being terrible to me, you know, but what's actually going on is that they're not being so great themselves because their protectors are triggered to protect their exiles, and the same thing is going on with the partner. So you can sit down with a couple in couples therapy and analyze these sequences, or even notice them as they might if they start to happen in the session. And then you can, once you've identified what parts are involved, then you can actually work with one of the people doing some individual IFS work right in the couple session, in order to identify, you know, work with the protector or maybe get in touch with the exile, maybe even heal the exile, which tends to give the partner of that person a lot more compassion and empathy for where they're coming from and what they're going through.
If there's more you want to say, go ahead.
No, that's really enough.
Okay, well, my intern here has got a question for you, Eric.
Okay. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
Well, I guess what I'm wondering is if these parts may be considered archetypal, that meaning in their basic patterns, are these parts common to everybody?
They are both common to everybody and they are unique. And in fact, I have developed something called the pattern system, which is basically a way of understanding various types of parts that people can have. And so you can think of that, they're not exactly archetypes in the Jungian sense, but it's, you know, similar. They're categories of parts. So, you know, like some of the ones I mentioned, controlling or people-pleasing or intellectual or passive-aggressive or dependent or, anyway, you can go on and on. There's probably 50 or 60 different types of patterns in the pattern system.
I see.
But I think I got off track here. So anyway, did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, I know. The other thing I wanted to say is that, however, each part is unique. You can't just put a part in a category and think you know it. When you do IFS, you don't just identify and say, oh, this is a pleaser part or this is a controlling part and think you know it. No, these parts are absolutely unique, and you must go in and get to know each part and talk to it and find out what its job is and what it does and how it feels. That's a crucial part of IFS. And so there's some people in the IFS world who don't like the pattern system because they think that it implies that you can put parts in boxes and not realize their uniqueness, even though that's not the case. But yeah.
Have you used IFS with young children?
No, I don't work with kids. But there are IFS therapists who do. I know it can actually be pretty effective with children.
Okay, this is David jumping back in here. I have the impression that IFS also lends itself to self-help. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you said something kind of indicating that early on. How does that work? What is it about it that lends itself to that?
So in order to get there, let me explain more about how the process works through the self.
Okay,
so,
good.
So basically what happens is that if you're working in yourself using IFS, you'll choose, with your therapist's guidance, if you have a therapist, you'll choose a part that you want to work on. And the first thing you'll do is go through a couple of the steps of the IFS process to either make sure that you are in self or to get into self with respect to that part, which means that the part hasn't taken you over and that you are open to getting to know it and you're not trying to get rid of it or judge it or you're not angry at it. So you get into self and then you get to know the part, and I'll assume it's a protector since that's usually where you start. You get to know it, find out what its positive intent is, and develop a trusting relationship with it from self. So that what I'm leading to here is that in IFS, the self is the agent of healing in the therapy. It's not the therapist. So the therapist is more a coach for the client in terms of helping them to get into self and to stay into self and to know what the steps of the process are and things like that. And of course, with some clients, the therapist has to sort of become the self in the system for a while. But generally, once a client develops the ability to get into self, at least in a session, they become the healer for their own parts. And therefore, and I can talk more about how that actually happens with the exiles, but basically, that's why IFS lends itself to self-therapy so well, because the self is the healer. So therefore, it's much more possible if you're able to conduct your own IFS session and know the steps and be able to stay in self, then you can do your own work and heal your own parts.
Well, I believe there are self-help books, right, written from this perspective, and in fact, I think maybe you've written one or more?
Yes, I've written, the main book I've written on IFS is called Self-Therapy, and it's, of course, has a double meaning, self-therapy in that you can do your own therapy, and self-therapy in that therapy comes from the self, the IFS self. And so that book is actually a manual for doing IFS. And even though it's written for the general public and teaches people how to do IFS on your own, it's also really a manual that a lot of IFS therapists use to learn IFS and to know the steps of it themselves.
Oh, fascinating. And have you ever gotten feedback from clients who kind of took themselves through it on their own?
Yes. Yeah, that's been very interesting because I should say the origins of this book is that many years ago, I started teaching courses to people in how to use IFS to work on yourself. And I've been doing that for years. And I was I was happy to discover that at least within the context of the course and also people would pair up with each other and do IFS peer counseling with each other for homework. And really, they got a lot out of it. And so I actually have two courses. So I took the two courses together and put them together and wrote Self-Therapy. And I didn't know how well people would do really just on their own, but I've gotten a lot of emails from a lot of people over the years. The book's already been out 4 or 5 years, telling me how much they'd gotten from it and how IFS had changed their lives. And so some people can really do it on their own. Now, I've also gotten many emails and phone calls from people who started doing IFS IFS using self-therapy and felt like it was a great method and felt like they couldn't go they couldn't do it on their own, or they couldn't go as far as they wanted to on their own, and so they would call me to see if they could work with me or if I could refer them to somebody. So I've had both. You know, many people can do it on their own, and many people need more help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's got to be very gratifying to you that it's been as successful as it has been. So, you know, kind of recapping the IFS part of our discussion here, what do you see as the strengths of the IFS model?
So one of the strengths that I haven't mentioned, well, there's actually, let me give two big ones. First of all, the way that it deals with defenses, which are is another name for protectors, that by the idea is that you don't try to work with an exile until you've gotten permission from the protector that's protecting that exile. That's where a lot of therapies get in trouble. They try to just barge in and work with the people's young pain, and they keep getting tossed out by protectors. But with IFS, you go in and you get to know the protector and develop a trusting relationship with it, and then ask its permission to work with the exile. And that makes the whole thing work a lot more smoothly. But the other thing is that IFS has a very well-defined, sophisticated method for healing exiles. So after you get to know the protector, find out what exiles it's protecting, get permission, then you actually go in from self, the client does, with the therapist's guidance, and works with the exile, gets to know it, asks the exile to show it where it got the pain or the trauma it's carrying, what happened in childhood, and you witness that from self. And then there's a reparenting step where in self you actually go in and give the exile a new experience that changes the way things are laid down in the psyche. This has actually now been confirmed by some of the research on memory reconsolidation.
Oh yeah, I'm very interested in that.
That's how reparenting works, is through memory reconsolidation. You actually give the exile a different experience, often through reparenting from the self, or through, you know, imagining the situation coming out differently, and that actually is part of the healing process. And there's a couple more steps to the healing process too, but there's a well-defined process to go through to actually heal an exile of whatever pain it's carrying.
When you have a new patient or client, I'm wondering, you know, how much time is spent didactically giving them this vocabulary and explaining concepts to them and so on?
You know, that varies a lot from therapist to therapist. These days I tend to get a lot of people who've already read my book. But even if they haven't, I generally recommend that they read my book. And so I like them to know the concepts, and I'll occasionally spend a little time in sessions doing a little psychoeducation. But it's not necessary. Some IFS therapists, or with certain clients, some therapists, you can do IFS without explaining anything except parts. You know, the rest of the concepts do not have to be explained to somebody. You can just do the work with them.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Now, earlier you mentioned something you've developed that you call the pattern system. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you can tell us a bit more about that, its relationship to IFS.
Okay.
Is it an elaboration of IFS, or is it something totally different?
It's something different, but that's very a natural complement to IFS. Basically, the pattern system is not a method of therapy. It's not a method of change. Well, mostly. A little bit it becomes that in self-therapy journey. But anyway, mostly it's not. It's a way of understanding the psyche and the personality and someone's psychology. And so it basically covers the content, the psychological content of the psyche, of the personality, whereas IFS provides a very powerful process for healing. So pattern system is the content, and IFS provides the process. So they're a perfect complement in that sense. And I developed the pattern system. I was actually working on it before I even found IFS, but it just became such a natural integration with IFS that my further development of the pattern system over the last 12 years has been very much, you know, in sync with IFS. So as an example, my wife and I did a study of inner critics, since that's such a crucial issue for so many people. And we identified seven primary types of inner critics. And each of those corresponds to a pattern in the pattern system. So there's the taskmaster, there's the perfectionist, there's the inner controller, there's the underminer, the guilt tripper, and so on. So each of those is a particular type of inner critic, and each of those corresponds to a pattern in the pattern system. The pattern system also contains healthy capacities. So for each pattern, there is a corresponding healthy capacity, or there could be more than one, but generally there's one primary one that transforms that pattern. So for example, if you have a people-pleasing pattern, the healthy capacity that transforms it is assertiveness. If you have an inner critic pattern that makes you feel bad about yourself, the healthy capacity that transforms it is self-esteem, and so on. And there's even more interesting, there are a bunch of different dimensions in the pattern system. And so each dimension has at least two patterns and at least two healthy capacities in an interesting relationship with each other, which, like, it shows where patterns tend to be in conflict with each other, which is another concept in IFS, which is called polarization, which we probably don't have time to get into. But anyway, I don't want to get into too much detail with the pattern system, but it basically is a way of not only talking about the different types of patterns and healthy capacities, but also showing how they're related to each other in the various dimensions.
Okay, well, at the top of the interview, you mentioned that there is a web application or a website that you've been working on. And so tell us about that.
So that's called Self Therapy Journey, and it's based on both IFS and the pattern system. And so you can go on there and you can treat it. I mean, it doesn't actually act like a therapist. It doesn't pretend to have a conversation with you like a therapist, but it allows you to do much of the same kind of deep therapeutic transformational work that you do in therapy. And it actually uses IFS. So basically the way it works is you go in, and most people start out by taking one of our two main quizzes. So you can take a quiz which will help you to identify what patterns you have that you might want to work on. And then you can choose one of those patterns. So let's say, to continue my example, let's say you took a quiz and you scored high in procrastination and you said, yeah, that's really a big issue for me. So, okay, so then you can decide, all right, I'm going to work on the, and that's one of the patterns in the pattern system and in self-therapy journey. So you would start on the procrastination pattern. And by the way, the healthy capacity that transforms it is work confidence. And so you would work on, you would use self-therapy journey to explore your procrastination pattern, to discover more about how you procrastinate, when you procrastinate, what triggers it, what thoughts do you have, what feelings do you have. And then you would actually, how you do this, there are checklists for all these things, and you can go through and check off which of those apply to you, and you can add your own, and you can also take notes and do guided journaling if you want. But then there's a point where you can actually be, there's a recorded guided fantasy that takes you through doing the sort of first half of an IFS session on a procrastination protector, and takes you through the steps of getting to know that protector and finding out its positive intent and developing a trusting relationship with it. That's all stage one. There's actually five stages in self-therapy journey. And then in stage two corresponds to working with exiles, which in the pattern system are called wounds. So there are different categories of exiles. So there's the attack wound, if you were yelled at a lot as a kid, and there's the basic deficiency wound, if you were made to feel worthless, and there's the abandonment wound and betrayal wound and rejection and so on. So there's a bunch of different types of wounds. And in stage two, you can go in and explore one of the wounds that's underlying your procrastination pattern. And there's a way to discover in self-therapy journey what those wounds are. And then you can go through and learn a lot about that particular exile. And then there's another guided fantasy for taking you through the second half of an IFS session in terms of healing the exile. And then there's further stages where you actually get to know the healthy capacity, work confidence, and then there's a whole big thing of helping people to develop a practice that they can do in their life where they practice it living from the healthy capacity rather than from the pattern.
Now, I don't know how long the site has been up. Have you gotten any feedback yet?
Yes. Well, it's been up for about 7 months, but we did a couple of years of testing before that. So it's been tested on a lot of people, and many of them, especially the ones who stuck with it, were able to really make significant changes that they wanted to make. Yep. So I was very happy. So it's a little bit easier way of getting into IFS than just reading my book, Self Therapy, because you're guided in doing the IFS work through the guided meditations.
Are there any fees involved?
Yes, it's very inexpensive. It's just $25 a month.
Uh-huh.
And people can also try it out for 2 weeks for free. So there's a 14-day free trial.
Yeah. So maybe paying something helps them to commit and to stick with it, because I would see that as the real challenge. That's probably my own.
Yeah, no, you're
one
right.
One of my parts is speaking there.
No, you're absolutely right. And I encourage people, unless people really prefer just doing completely alone, I encourage people to actually get a friend or a buddy.
Yeah.
To either be with them while they're doing it or to talk to them afterwards. Because in addition to just that natural human support that we all need, or many of us need when we're doing inner work, it also helps people to be accountable and say, okay, I'm going to do a session next week and I'll talk to you after that. Or when they're doing the homework practice, you know, if they have a buddy that can help them to actually do the practice, to know that they're going to talk to their buddy about it. So for people who want it, and we also have an online community, so people can go on there and find a buddy if they don't have a friend to do it with.
You know, you mentioned that it's not a program that people can actually dialogue with, but Carnegie Mellon, where you got that PhD so long ago, is one of the centers, leading places for artificial intelligence. Is there any part of you that would like to, down the line, have it become a interactive
yes.
speaking part?
Yes.
Talk? Yeah,
I've actually thought about that. I mean, first of all, there's actually another step that I've thought about, which is, over the years, I could imagine myself gradually automating more and more of the therapy process. Of course, it could never take the place of a good therapist, because the therapeutic relationship is such an important part of therapy, and you know, having an expert there is so important. But I do imagine myself eventually, if I live long enough, moving into some of that artificial intelligence stuff. Yeah, that would be fun to play with.
Yes, yeah, it would be. Well, this has been delightful. As we wind down, I'm wondering if there's anything more that you'd like our listeners to know.
You know, one thing I would say is one of the things I'm really having fun doing recently is webinars. And so I do webinars on self-therapy journey, and I also do webinars on specific psychological issues, like I've done one on depression, one on people-pleasing, one on procrastination, and so on. So I invite people, you know, join my email list. The webinars are free. Just call in and watch me talk about some of these different patterns from the pattern system and IFS and self-therapy journey.
Yeah, you can give your URL here if you'd like to.
So it's selftherapyjourney.com. It's easy.
Okay, well, that's
easy.
Also,
you know, the other thing I want to say is we don't just have these two quizzes. We have about 7 or 8 other quizzes, and I'm developing more all the time. The pattern system lends itself to quizzes. So if you like to learn about your psychology by taking quizzes, come to our site, too. It's really fun.
Okay. Well, it's been fun talking to you, Dr. Jay Early. Thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
And thank you, David. I really enjoyed having this conversation with you. Felt like you really were good in bringing me out.
Okay, Eric, well, there's another one in the can.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
So what strikes you about this interview with Dr. Jay Early?
I like hearing his description of parts and, you know, what that means to everybody. It does seem like a very universal approach, something anyone can benefit from.
Yeah, and it was interesting just how widespread that idea is in, you know, all these other systems that we mentioned during the interview, this idea of internal parts. Geez, it goes back, it probably goes back to the Greeks since everything seems to, but certainly we can find it in Freud.
Certainly, yes.
Yeah, in Freud and in Jung and then lots of people since. And yet to talk about it as parts seems to be something that will resonate for people intuitively without a lot of explanation.
Yeah, yeah, it does. You know, my immediate thought was he's referring to inner figures. Of mm-hmm. course, studying Jung, I have this sort of vocabulary and language of
right.
depth psychology that I kind of translate into that sometimes.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But hearing it in terms of parts and being described that way, yeah, it sounds like something anyone can, you know, just pick up.
Yeah, yeah. Years ago, I was in a workshop by Bandler and Grinder, the two guys who created what later came to be known as NLP or neuro-linguistic programming. And I remember them working with me. I volunteered to work on something. And so they would use the language of, okay, now go inside and ask. I was actually working on the issue of having some difficulty visualizing. And, you know, so many of these systems seem to involve going inside and visualizing something. Mm-hmm. And I always felt a little frustrated because as a therapist, I would do that with other people. As a teacher, I was leading those kinds of exercises. And yet I felt not terribly good at being a visualizer. So they said, go inside and ask your parts, consult with your parts to see what part doesn't want you to be able to visualize. So, you know, want to go along with it. So I kind of closed my eyes and asked myself that question. And doggone, if something didn't come up for me right away, a recollection that I had an uncle who was a homicide detective in Watts. And one day he took me off to go with him around Watts and to the police station and so on. And you know, Watts being a very rough place. And he showed me a deck of photos, of murder photos, that he had in his desk. Now, I was probably just 10, 11, 12, 13 maybe, somewhere in that range. It was a terribly irresponsible thing to do. Mm. And that's what came up. And I realized, oh my God, some part of me is blocking out the ability to visualize, trying to protect me from those images.
Wow.
And even as I'm talking to you, I'm kind of remembering at least one of those images. Mm. This is a bad cop, bad uncle.
Wow. Quite amazing how these processes of visualization and NLP and IFS can trigger these memories and bring things out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And what it reminded me is something that Jay said about gaining permission from your protector to talk with an exile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to establish rapport with whatever mechanism has been put into place to protect, you know, some prior trauma or
yeah.
something that feels quite tender.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vocabulary of this approach is so kind of easy to understand. It's simple. It's not as esoteric as a vocabulary that includes the shadow and the collective unconscious. So these are words that anybody could relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my parts could dismiss it and say, oh, this sounds too simplistic and so on. But my overall feeling is, actually, I can see how this would be a very powerful approach. What's your sense of that?
My sense is that it's a very integrative approach
mm-hmm.
that anyone could really pick up and visualize for themselves what these parts are and probably have quite a bit of imagery that just comes into mind when hearing firefighter, protector, exile. you know, what that means to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they might not even need those words, as he pointed out.
Right.
It might be just the word parts is enough to do the work.
Sure.
Yeah, I was impressed by that. So I think we've done it again, unless you've got something else you want to say.
No.
Okay, well, goodbye, everybody, and we'll see you again soon, we hope.
Welcome to Dr. Dave's podcast. Focus on the sound. Breathe deeply. Focus on the sound. Turn on. Tune in. Turn on. Tune in. Breathe in. Turn on. Tune in. Above all, reach over to that button and make a donation to Dr. Dave's Psychological Metastic Shrink Wrap Radio podcast. Donate now.
Thanks, Phil Schneider, for that hypno-fantastic call to action. I hope you are all sufficiently entranced to become a financial supporter and put an end to my obsessive thoughts about putting the show behind a paywall. I thank all 125 of you who've become regular financial supporters. However, there are thousands who are listening to this very episode who are not yet. Please help to keep me going and to stop me from going in that direction of the paywall. I'm happy to report that we have a new transcript on the site, thanks to listener Renata Silecki. She has graciously transcribed number 399, Trauma and the Body, with Pat Ogden, PhD. That's such a good one and definitely deserving of joining our other transcribed episodes. As you know from recent shows, I'm currently doing some advertising here for Audible.com. which I feel very good about because I've long been one of their customers. Like you, I love getting good audio content. I've got an Audible recommendation for you. Guess what? It turns out that today's guest, Dr. Jay Early, has one of his books on Audible.com. The title is Self-Therapy, Transform Stuck Parts of Yourself into Inner Resources of Strength, Love, and Freedom. It's narrated by Dr. Early himself, too. And by the way, Early is spelled E-A-R-L-E-Y. You can listen to the whole unabridged book by becoming an Audible.com subscriber. And you can get this audiobook for free with no obligation to continue by going to audibletrial.com/shrink. And for those of you that are new to Shrink Wrap Radio, you might not be aware that we have an app for that. That is for listening to these shows and communicating with me. And you can find full details on our site under the apps tab.
Hi, everybody. I'm Michelle, undergraduate student at Stockholm University. And guys, you're listening to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, Michelle, a longtime listener whom I had the privilege of meeting when I was in Stockholm, conducting a dream workshop a few years back already. Now let me share a couple of recent emails from our Shrink Wrap Radio listener community. The first one is from Meredith, who writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I've been a listener of your podcast for some time. I feel I have learned and grown from the listening. You interview such a fantastic range of people, and you always manage to offer your own insights and understandings as well. I have some clients as a therapist and am now undertaking further study. I have also had my own journey with somatic therapy, trauma, and how it manifests in day-to-day life and how to work with people affected by it remains my passion. Why I have been moved to write to you is I've just listened to your interview with Pat Ogden. It reminded me of something that I would like to raise. It seems a phenomenon that is happening here in Australia as well as in the USA. Whenever PTSD is mentioned, you seem to bring it back to veterans. I do understand that, probably especially in the USA, there are waves of veterans coming from the current conflicts. However, I find that focusing the interviewee regularly back to veterans in relation to PTSD is not honoring the others who suffer and have suffered this debilitating disorder now and historically. I suppose what I would like to suggest is the focus to be sometimes brought specifically to other population groups, for example, PTSD with relation to asylum seekers, childhood trauma or domestic violence, etc. The approach and outcomes will differ with each presentation, and I would like to hear how the interviewees work with these people. Thanks, Dr. Dave. Warmly, Meredith Pitt. Well, I wrote back to Meredith, and here's what I sent. Hi, Meredith. Thanks for being a listener and for this feedback. I will keep it in mind. You're right that I do at least bring up the question of trauma for soldiers because it is a huge problem in this country, especially, and I don't think it's being adequately addressed. At the same time, in my own defense, I'd point out that I have episodes specifically focusing on other sorts of trauma. For example, number 416, which is specifically about developmental trauma, and number 211, which is specifically about rape, and number 403, also about rape and family violence. Still, I appreciate your alerting me, and I'll keep your feedback in mind. Warmly, David. This next one comes from Dan, who writes, Hi, Dr. Dave. I really enjoy and learn so much from your podcast, and my donation has been long, long overdue. Now that I'm starting my clinical psychology internship in the California Correctional System, I will be able to put your and your guests' knowledge to good use. Actually, I already put your podcast to good use during my practicum hours in two Bay Area agencies that serve primarily Native American clients. Podcasts that helped me include those that dealt with treatments for addictions and also altered states of awareness. I encourage you to talk to your colleague and mine, Ethan Nebelkoff, about interviewing someone who works in and with this community. As for me, I really enjoyed hearing Dr. Eduardo Duran speak several years ago at the California Institute for Integral Studies. I think he would be a great guest on your show to talk about historical trauma, spirituality, and culture. His books include Healing the Soul Wound, that deals with clinical case studies in the area of addiction, abuse, and other problems facing us in the modern world, and Buddha in Red Face, a novel discussing the teachings of a Native American holy man. Keep up the good work, and sincerely, and that's from Dan Schellenberg, MFT, that's Marriage Family Therapist, and he writes soon to be PsyD, that is Doctor of Psychology. So good for you, Dan. Wishing you good luck as you finish up your graduate studies there. And I'm glad to hear that Shrinkwrap Radio has been an asset to you along the way on that journey. And you're right. Ethan Nebelkoff is a mutual friend and colleague and longtime friend going all the way back to my graduate days at the University of Michigan. And thanks to your encouragement, I have contacted Ethan and invited him to be a guest on the show. And he is accepted, and you'll be hearing him here in just 2 or 3 weeks. And also, I've made note of your recommendation of inviting Dr. Eduardo Duran, and we'll see if there are any holes left over left after my conversation with Ethan. He may have a different perspective, that is Dr. Duran, and so I'll probably be following up with him as well. Let me read one more, this one from Richard Powell, who I can always count on for thoughtful and thought-provoking communication. Richard writes, Hi, David. Just finished episode number 417, A Jungian Understanding of Crop Circles with Gary Bobroff, M.A. It was a difficult one for me to listen to because I think I believe that most, if not all, crop circles are created by humans. There is a wonderful documentary on the subject, but I can't remember the name of it. I just remember an interview from it with the two guys who make some of the big circles in the UK, and the interviewer asking them how they felt about people having these religious experiences in the circles they created. The one fellow said something like, "Well, that really is the desire of most artists, isn't it? I mean, we probably wouldn't do it if the fanatics don't flock out to see our work, or didn't flock out to see our work." Richard goes on to say, "I found that just wonderful, and it got me to thinking at the time about the motivation to produce art, or really anything else. I suppose some widget makers are motivated solely by profit, but when I look at a beautiful watch or kettle or automobile, I'm often impressed with how important aesthetics is to very functional items. But that is a whole other topic I won't get sidetracked on. From this interview, I was really interested in the research on skeptics having a lower than random chance of having paranormal experiences. I'll have to try and find that research and read more about it. I'm fascinated by the idea that our worldview not only colors how we see the world, but actually changes our interaction with the world so we have a different felt experience of it. I've seen that in two areas of interest to me personally: religious communities and groups of skeptics. I love being in both groups, so I guess I'm a third type, maybe a holy rascal, as Rabbi Shapiro says. And can we move in and out of perspectives fully? That is a topic my son and I have discussed in length. Well, the actual question we discuss is, can I adopt a belief I know is good for me, even though I don't at first believe it? Can I willfully enter a state of belief? He thinks not, I think so. So this crop circle thing is an example of that. When I heard Gary talking about the experiences people have when they walk through a circle and, quotes, feel the energy of it, I wondered, could I enter into that, even knowing that the circle is, in all likelihood, created by sneaky artists or math geeks with ropes and boards during the wee hours of the night? I actually think I could. Are those math artists somehow performing a priestly duty? Is all religion a sort of created illusion that is good and valuable to us? Do we willingly suspend disbelief in order to enter into the magic of the feelings? And do those feelings really exist beyond my body? Maybe somehow created by, or channeled by, or influenced by the math artists? Priest as artist. I guess that's not a new topic, but this puts a new spin on it. I wanted to also touch on a couple of things from your after amble section. Gearhead stuff first. As you may remember, I'm a huge podcast consumer, as well as an Audible.com subscriber, and I've been dismayed and frustrated by how user-unfriendly the existing technology is. I think it is created largely for music listeners and people who listen to audio novels. For other kinds of listening, it's not great. So I'm taking this opportunity to put out to the universe what I want. I want an MP3 player for podcasts and nonfiction books with real buttons and wheels. I want to be able to put my finger on a mechanical wheel on the device in my pocket while I'm walking, or on the seat next to me while driving the car, and rotate the wheel back to re-listen to a section without having to look at it or enter my password, etc. I want some kind of simple audible and graphic display as well that indicates how far I've gone back, and a one-button way to place a fast bookmark. Then I want a way to click from bookmark to bookmark till I find the section I want to listen to again. Next, I want a much-improved iTunes that allows me to reorder my podcasts, delete episodes I don't want to listen to again, and share them easily with friends. Does anyone else want similar things? Is there a Grumpy Podcast Listener Facebook page or somewhere that I can share these ideas? I have both an iPhone and a Sony Walkman and use both to listen to podcasts and audiobooks. The Walkman interface is better, actual buttons, but I cannot listen to Audible.com books on it. Some technology / licensing issue or something. Do the people at Audible even listen to their own product? They could partner with Sony or someone else to make a smoking cool audible content device designed for listeners. The few people I know who are like me, audio content freaks, make do mostly with iPods or smartphones of one flavor or other. Apparently, the old wheel rotation iPod is pretty good, and I like that idea. Maybe I just need to break down and buy one of those. Have any of your listeners found the killer platform or device? I've tried alternatives to iTunes too, but iTunes has the most extensive list of podcasts on the planet. Lastly, regarding Richard Schwartz and internal family systems theory, I purchased and listened to Self Therapy by Jay Early through Audible. There's also a great podcast interview with Jay by Tammy Simon or Simon on the Sounds True podcast, Insights at the Edge. I'd send it to you, but oh yeah, there's no easy way to do that from inside iTunes. Anyway, I use the concepts and general techniques of IFST all the time now and love that it is a method that does not make an enemy of any of my inner parts, but sees all my parts, including my shadow parts, as created to serve a purpose for my well-being. If you can't get Richard, I would highly recommend Jay. Really, lastly, I just wanted to say I enjoy your banter with Eric on this episode, too. The surfing/skiing discussion was great. More of that. Warmest regards, Richard. Well, Richard, as always, thanks for your feedback. I won't go into as much detail as you have, and I won't answer the mind-numbing questions in your first paragraph or two. But let me sort of start at the end and say that I had forgotten that you had written here about there being an audio.com book by Jay Early. When I mentioned it earlier in this interview, I thought I was discovering it for the first time. Maybe when I read your email sometime way back, it planted a seed. But at any rate, it feels, again, one of those synchronistic things that I get to your letter and that it references today's podcast interview. I also was impressed by the handiness of this IFS therapy approach. And so it's good to hear from you and that you found so much value in it. As for the iPod, the listening challenges, the technical listening challenges, I wrote back to you, and I'll just reiterate a little bit here for the listeners, suggesting that, hey, Apple is having their big reveal actually a week from today as I'm recording this. I'm looking forward to that. And they will be probably announcing a new iPhone with a new operating system, and maybe it will have some of the features, maybe either the device or the software will have some of the features that you're looking for. I also mentioned that there are quite a few podcast listening software programs, or better said, apps, podcast apps, and I've played around with several of them. Each one seems to have different features. And some of them do have, for example, I've been using one, well, actually, it's the Apple Podcast now that lets you skip ahead using your voice and saying, skip ahead 1 minute, Siri, skip ahead a minute. And others have buttons where you can skip back, skip forward a certain amount, and so on. So keep searching, and I do think things maybe are moving a bit in the direction that you're looking for. And the whole crop circle thing, yeah, I'm a bit, in the skeptical camp myself. Not sure what to make of it, as people could tell from the interview. I try to keep an open mind. I don't always succeed. But one of the interesting things that you did not reference in your account of, and I know that there are these accounts on the web explaining crop circles as being the work of pranksters who use ropes and boards, as you put it. But I was interested in Gary's report that he had been in crop circles where it seemed as if the, what would you call it? I don't know if it's grass or hay or whatever the crop is, wheat, whatever it is, that it was actually growing different, that there was kind of a right angle growth that seem to be coming out from the stem at a right angle. So if that's true, that certainly would give some credence to something else going on. So, so that doesn't exactly settle everything, but Richard, it's always great to hear from you. And with that, I think I better wrap it up for today so I can get this out something on somewhat like on time. So, as always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Remember that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemail on our message phone at 415-830-4014. You can also leave voicemails using our iPhone/Android app, about which you can find full details in the Apps tab on our site. Thanks again to Dr. J. Early for introducing us to Internal Family Systems Therapy, or IFS, or IFST, as you prefer. My next episode will feature return guest Dr. Ruben Nyman, whom I've interviewed twice before on sleep and dreaming, and who is one of my favorite guests. He works closely with well-known Dr. Andrew Weil. This time, Dr. Nyman and I will be discussing his work with what he refers to as integrative psychotherapy. I'm really looking forward to speaking with him again, and I'm sure you'll be stimulated by this very brilliant guest. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.